take the scenic drive to the Guitar Oasis Cool in Jefferson County. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, jeffsguitar.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast from slysoffice.com, the very first from the brand new Lustron Broadcast Center. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation joins us. John, good afternoon.
I like that. You should do like one of those Limbaugh things where it's like, you know, like the world headquarters.
World headquarters. Yeah. Well, here I am in my metal house looking at all my political memorabilia. And thanks to Dylan Brogan and Trevor Hoffman, I have my own studio.
I kind of love that. I think that's, you know, that again, that's how Limbaugh does it. Doesn't he have that place down in Palm Beach?
He does. He does. I don't have a golden.
So you're almost.
I don't have a golden microphone, and I don't have as many oxycodone in the house.
I was going to say, but otherwise.
Otherwise, it's the same. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Homes are very similar. All right. I'm going to play some clips from President Trump. And this is the first time we've said President Trump on the program.
Yeah.
here are some clips from his speech yesterday as he spoke to hundreds of people.
Today's ceremony, however, has very special meaning, because today we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people. For too long, a small group in our nation's capital has reaped the rewards of government while the people have borne the cost. Washington flourished, but the people did not share in its wealth. Politicians prospered, but the jobs left and the factories closed. The establishment protected itself, but not the citizens of our country. Their victories have not been your victories. Their triumphs have not been your triumphs. And while they celebrated in our nation's capital, there was little to celebrate for struggling families all across our land. That all changes starting right here and right now, because this moment is your moment. It belongs to you.
All right, there you go, John.
I can disagree with none of that.
Yeah, you know, I was struck by what he said there. Bernie Sanders easily could have said that.
Well, honestly, I think many presidents could have and would have said that. And that's the troubling part. Because we know that politicians, and Donald Trump is a politician, we know that politicians will use rhetoric in an attempt to convince people that they are on their side, that they will do for them. That's not new. That goes back, you know, at least to the founding of the American experiment, and I would argue a good deal longer. And so what he said there was fine. In fact, it had a small D Democratic overlay to it. I think he and his people wanted it to echo probably Andrew Jackson, who they seem to revere quite a bit. That's fine. That's not a problem, except that...
What, are we going to have another Trail of Tears?
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. One should remember that Andrew Jackson came in with great small D Democratic rhetoric. And in fact, let people party in the White House for several days, it sounds like. The problem was that his rhetoric did not extend to slaves. His rhetoric did not extend to Native Americans. His rhetoric did not extend to women. His rhetoric did not extend to the overwhelming majority of Americans. Andrew Jackson's rhetoric was directed toward a small portion of Americans, a tiny portion of Americans, who happen to be his supporters, and who he promised great things to, but by and large delivered very little for. And so I would offer a caution that if, as some suggested, this was a Jacksonian speech, we're in for a world of hurt.
Well, it is interesting when you look at the people that are up on Capitol Hill right now that President Trump has put up his nominees. Weren't they part of the system of the elite profiting at the expense of the proletariat?
Yeah, I would identify them as unindicted co-conspirators.
And wouldn't Donald Trump himself, he has admitted to being part of this process and donating money for his own personal interest?
Yeah, but has he been indicted?
No, not yet.
He may be separate from
that. May be Tuesday. I think we're looking at Tuesday.
So not only has he been a part of it, this is the scary thing. His understanding of the process, his description of the process, invariably goes back to a argument that I know how this thing works. I gamed it. I did all the things that we would criticize someone for doing. I gave money to have influence with politicians of both parties. I didn't care. I just wanted to influence them. I used that influence to get protections and regulatory favor to avoid. I avoided paying taxes meticulously, made it a art form. I, to this day, will not reveal my business dealings or my tax returns. You know, I mean, not only was he a part of the system, Donald Trump is and has always been kind of the ugliest side of the system, the most troubling side of the system. And he remains so. Now, could he change his stripes? Could he become something different? Perhaps. Well, I can tell you a good way to do that. He should join in the opposition to his nominee for Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, who proposes to dramatically harm and undermine public education in America. And anyone who knows anything, and I would not include Betsy DeVos in that group, but anyone who knows anything knows that education is the first step up for great masses of people. It's what gives them not merely employment skills, and sometimes it does, but also the understanding of the system, the understanding of the structures, so that they too can rise. And so, number one, he could oppose his nominee for Secretary of Education. Number two, he could oppose his nominee for Secretary of Labor, because, of course, his nominee for Secretary of Labor is for depressing wages, for weakening the condition of
and
the working
using,
class in
and
America.
And using the government to do so.
Absolutely. Well, all these people are. Betsy DeVos is a big government, you know, player if ever there was one.
And Councilor Nichols, wouldn't it also be fair to say that poor people are harmed when we have great environmental damage, that they are unusually vulnerable?
They are always the first to be harmed. It's why we have the term environmental racism, the notion that if there's, you know, something bad as regards the environment, it's usually going to be put where people who have often historically had the least political power.
Well, Attorney General Pruitt has hardly been an advocate for the people in Oklahoma that have been victims of fracking.
Well, and he has fought efforts for years and years across this country, not just in Oklahoma, but in other places through the Republican Attorney General Association, that undermine and harm the ability of citizens to protect their land, to protect their water, to protect their air in rural areas and urban areas, you know, across this country. And so you have in him someone who sort of embodies the use of big government to benefit incredibly wealthy people, many of whom don't even live in the United States, against the great mass of people who often need, and this is obviously Robert M. La Follette's theory 100 years ago, who need government as a counterbalance to the rapacious nature of corporations.
All right, let's get to some more clips. Here is Donald Trump talking about the country.
mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities, rusted out factories scattered like tombstones across the landscape of our nation, an education system flush with cash, but which leaves our young and beautiful students deprived of all knowledge. And the crime, and the gangs, and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
American carnage?
Whoa. Turns out, you know, Sly, we were talking about some problems just a moment ago. Turns out it was far worse than we thought.
American carnage.
I know. It's look, this was noted even by people who were relatively sympathetic to Trump, that rarely had you heard a inaugural address given, and we have to give some context here, a little bit of perspective, given in a moment of relatively low unemployment, relatively good measures of job growth, some evidence of an overall economic upturn, decent circumstance, at least for some retail, stock market booming, you know, something that Mr. Trump should understand, but also, you know, some evidence across this country of efforts to address real problems. Not sufficient. You and I would be the first to say that Democrats and Republicans have failed tremendous numbers of Americans. But to see it as a carnage at this point is, it is not just ungracious or I would argue even disconnected. It's also completely out of balance. Do you remember 8 years ago when Barack Obama was sworn in? What was our circumstance then? We were in the midst of two wars that were unpaid for and that were by many measures opposed by huge numbers of Americans. We were experiencing an economic meltdown so severe that we were shedding 800,000 to 900,000 jobs on a monthly basis, just an incredible run-up of unemployment heading toward double-digit unemployment. We had such a corrupt governance that the way in which our Congress had chosen to respond to that circumstance was to bail out big banks and to literally give power to bankers like this Mnuchin character who would go after, try and balance the books of their banks by going after working class and low-income people who had minuscule debts that could easily have been dealt with, but instead turned the power, not just of their banks, but the government that backed them against the people. Now, in that circumstance, if Barack Obama had used the word American carnage, what would Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Donald Trump said about Barack Obama in that
they would have said he was unpatriotic.
They would have said, you know, boy, maybe that's his America. But it's not the real America, right? They would have ripped on him and torn at him and been viciously critical. And yet, after 8 years of Obama, for his flaws and weaknesses, not a perfect president, no president ever has been, but after 8 years of Obama doing, you know, relatively serious work of repairing the damage that was done by George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and their allies to huge portions of this country. After 8 years of that, and after he had thanked Obama for being so gracious and so helpful in the transition, he imagines an American carnage. It is a bizarre statement. And also one, you know, when you literally have, you're surrounded by people who you're going to work with, people like Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, who were a part of what so damaged America. You know, Paul Ryan, the lead cheerleader for bank bailouts, you know, guy who's literally targeted Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, Mitch McConnell. I mean, a guy who literally did everything in his power to obstruct the economic recovery that occurred after McConnell and his allies had bailed out the banks. Not because they bailed out the banks, but after they had locked up huge portions of America's economy in a bank bailout, still because of a stimulus, there was the beginning of economic recovery. And he's standing with these people who really could be, if you wanted to be very cruel, accused of perpetuating carnage. And instead of saying, and I, you know, at least saying, and I include Paul Ryan first and center in what I am describing about what is wrong in America. Instead of that, he was shaking hands with Ryan and went just a couple minutes later to have some very elite, very upscale meal, you know, in the Capitol with Ryan and McConnell.
Yes, they had Gulf shrimp, they had lobster tail, and bison with a little chocolate for dessert.
You know, I mean, with all due respect, it's what Donald Trump wants, and it's not hard to describe. What he wants for us is to suspend disbelief, to just simply accept what he says as somehow a truism, a reality. It's not.
All right, let's take a look at what he said with regards to the United States and the rest of the world.
At the bedrock of our politics will be a total allegiance to the United States of America. And through our loyalty to our country, we will rediscover our loyalty to each other. When you open your heart to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice. The Bible tells us how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity. We must speak our minds openly, debate our disagreements honestly, but always pursue solidarity. When America is united, America is totally unstoppable. So to all Americans in every city, near and far, small and large, from mountain to mountain, from ocean to ocean, hear these words. You will never be ignored again. Your voice, your hopes, and your dreams will define our American destiny. And your courage and goodness and love will forever guide us along the way. Together, we will make America strong again. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless America.
So you just need to open your heart to patriotism, and love will follow, John.
Well, there you go. And I'm here. I was just imagining as I listened to that. What if Luis Gutierrez or Maxine Waters or Mark Pocan gotten up and given a speech in which they talked about American carnage and talked about, you know, clearly their vision of patriotism, and then close off with those remarks? Would Donald Trump cheer them on?
Nope.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? That if we were to imagine these words spoken by someone who said, let's even harken back to like a Robert M. La Follette or a Henry Wallace or a George McGovern or any number of folks, or even a Franklin Roosevelt, who would say, you know, we must define patriotism by the measure that Hubert Humphrey gave us, right? It's not if the wealthy are living well. It's if those with the least are doing well. If those who, you know, haven't had all the breaks in life aren't the children of millionaires and billionaires. if working class kids are getting a great education, have housing, health care, access to transportation, and not as a privilege, but as something that their government helps to assure they will have not just access to, but in the case of something like health care, it's understood as a right. And then had that conclusion, you'll never be neglected, you'll be listened to. I would suggest that there would be, on the part of very wealthy people like Donald Trump and many of his cabinet nominees, fear, deep concern. It wouldn't feel right to them. But yet he, as a candidate who has been, as former candidate, who is so blatantly cruel to so many people, who was dismissive of and crude in his comments as regards women, people of color, members of various religions, refugees, immigrants. If he would have us believe that his patriotism includes everyone and that he really does want good things for everyone, then, I think there could be quite a bit of, enthusiasm and sympathy. But the nature of his campaign has been to push aside and neglect so many Americans that it is unsettling when he suggests that now we should put this immense faith in him. We should unify behind him. And I offer one final thing. If he wanted people to be comfortable, and if he wanted people to really hear him in the most positive light, if he wanted people to embrace the things he's saying, as you could on paper, so much of what's being said here, you'd say, look at that and say, well, that sounds good. If he wanted people to really to open their hearts to that, perhaps he might have started the process by doing something other than diminishing and dismissing civil rights icon John Lewis.
All right, let me play one more clip here. This is Congressman Jamie Raskin. He is a Democrat from Maryland.
What about the idea of the importance of the peaceful transfer of power, the observance of it? Obviously, I heard people say, look, if Hillary Clinton can go, anyone could go, of anyone that would find it difficult to be there.
I know is when I watched that speech, which was the meanest, most low-down, insulting inaugural address in American history, I mean, deeply divisive and offensive to the Obamas, I felt completely vindicated by it, and nobody gave me a hard time afterwards. I mean, most of my constituents were very happy that I wasn't going. I was hearing from right-wingers all over the country. After the speech, nobody was complaining anymore. People understood. I mean, these are abnormal times. In normal times, people go to each other's inaugurations, regardless of political party. The problems with Donald Trump go way beyond partisanship. I mean, the man, he acts as though he's completely oblivious to the Constitution, to the rule of law, and there's an erratic and deranged quality to the things that he says and does. And this is a very scary moment for the American Republic.
So he had a chance to actually make the people that skipped the inaugural speech look bad by giving an inclusive, thoughtful speech.
Right.
And he missed that opportunity.
He missed so many opportunities, Sly. It's almost beyond comprehension. His staff engaged in the worst sort of malpractice. They wrote a speech for the campaign rather than writing, he's talking about Trump, they wrote a speech for the campaign rather than writing a speech for governing. And what could Trump have done? In a situation, just to give you one narrow example, he could have said, look, in the last few days I wrangled a little with some of the Democrats in the House of Representatives, John Lewis and others. And maybe I said some things I shouldn't have said. Maybe they said some things they shouldn't have said. But at the end of the day, I'm now the President of the United States, and they form the Congress of the United States. And I pledge to you that I will work with them. I will make them proud of my presidency, and I hope that I can make them proud of their congressional service. You understand, if he'd said that, right, he would have stood on the high ground, even with all the criticisms that we might steer toward Donald Trump, even with the discomfort you and I might have with him. If he had made remarks like that, he would have owned the moment. But he didn't do anything like that, Sly. The amazing thing about Donald Trump is that he never acknowledged or showed respect for, really most of the people that were on that stage with him, and frankly for American history. Where was the reflection on the Constitution?
None.
In that speech?
None.
Where was the reflection? Where was the reflection on America's incredibly positive role in the world? Not always. And this is, you and I both have had plenty of criticisms of things America has done. But where was the reflection on the many, many positive things America has done?
Well, I have plenty of criticism.
And might try to.
I have many criticisms what Americans politicians have done. That's for sure.
If I can pause for 1 second, just to say that Jimmy Carter and George W. Bush were in that audience, right?
Uh-huh.
They were with them there. Do you know that if you go to Africa and you talk to people in countries that really are, in some cases struggling, but in some cases also really transforming and moving forward in very positive ways. A lot of people in Africa who will speak very, very positively of not just Jimmy Carter, but also George W. Bush for many of his initiatives. And so, that's what I mean when I talk about the evidence of things that America has done in the world that are positive in the past and the potential of things that could be tremendously positive. He could say that. Remember, he claims to have been an opponent of the war in Iraq, as I was. He could have said, look, I know America's made terrible mistakes. We've done things wrong. We've launched wars we shouldn't have launched. We're not going to do that anymore. But I can tell you that as President of the United States, I'm going to change our trade policies, which haven't worked for us and haven't worked for other countries. But I'm not going to withdraw from the world. I want to continue the incredible work that Jimmy Carter did for peace in the Middle East. I want to continue the incredible work that George W. Bush did for addressing AIDS and other diseases in Africa. I want to continue the efforts of Barack Obama to find diplomatic solutions. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he could have said that.
Yeah, but all those things you're saying would have taken the spotlight off him. And if you understand his personality, that just ain't going to happen. John Nichols.
He also would have made the speech more than 16 minutes.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SlysOffice.com.
Pleasure, my friend.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.